been freed.
Sari Bashi, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Israeli-American human rights lawyer, former program director at Human Rights Watch. We'll link to your New York Review of Books article, Gaza, the Threat of Petition. When we come back, a group of 8 senators led by Bernie Sanders form a fight club to challenge Democratic minority leader Chuck Schumer's handling of Trump. We'll speak with Ralph Nader, who's been taking on the Democratic Party for decades. 60 years ago, he published his landmark book, Unsafe at Any Speed. Stay with us. Witness a World, performed by the Palestinian Youth Choir on the B Train here in New York. The choir is debuting at Whitty Hall in Brooklyn this evening. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. A group of 8 U.S. senators have formed what they call a fight club to force minority leader Senator Chuck Schumer to oppose Trump more aggressively and to back more populist candidates in the 2026 midterms. The group includes Democrats Chris Van Hollen of Maryland, Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, Independent Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont. For more, we're joined by a lifelong activist who's run for president 4 times. Ralph Nader is a longtime consumer advocate, corporate critic, founder of the Capitol Hill Citizen newspaper, where his front page piece in the current issue is headlined, Congress is there for the taking. Now is the time to take it. And it's also the 60th anniversary of his book, Unsafe at Any Speed, which took on major corporations, in that case, GM. Ralph, before we go to Unsafe at Any Speed and what this 60th anniversary means, if you can talk about this fight club and say what you mean about Congress is up for the taking and it should be taken.
Well, you know, there are 535 men and women in Congress. They put their shoes on like we do every morning. They are possessed of the delegated power under the Constitution of the citizens. That's why the preamble to the Constitution starts, we the people, not we the Congress. And so we have 435 congressional districts, and there's no organization, Congress watchdog groups, with reasonable staff in any of those organizations, in any of those districts to monitor and push members of Congress in the right direction. So 1,500 corporations pretty much get their way on Capitol Hill, and the result is devastating. Congress is the main tool to challenge the entrenched corporate supremacists that are controlling this country. They're strategizing and planning our entire society. Whether it's the tax system or public lands or the social safety net or energy or health insurance and health care. And so I wrote this article, which is really quite obvious because the history of our country shows that when the people rise up, it takes less than 1% of them reflecting public opinion, focusing on the Congress, and knowing what they're talking about to defeat the corporate lobbies. We did it on auto safety with about 1,000 people around the country. We didn't have the money or campaign contributions, but we had the evidence that they were killing people in unsafe cars and that they knew and their engineers knew but were suppressed, how to build cars that could prevent death and injury and make the cars more fuel efficient and less polluting. So we have these examples, which I put in my new book, Civic Self-Respect, just to try to get people to stop giving up on themselves, stop being cynical, which leads to withdrawal, and develop a process of summoning the senators and representatives to their own town meetings, choreographed by the citizenry in town halls or school auditoriums, where there's no intermediate flacks, and the senators and representatives have to hear the agenda of the people. The big deception in this country, Amy, is polarization. They keep talking about polarization, red state, blue state, conservative, liberal, fighting each other. There is huge consensus by conservative and liberal voters in this country on major agendas to improve their livelihoods. It's minimum wage. It's cracking down on corporate crooks who are bleeding consumer dollars and savings. It's universal health insurance. It's tax reform, taxing the super rich and the corporations that are very undertaxed comes in at 85%. Breaking up the big banks after the Wall Street collapse came to close to 90%. The process of deceiving the people in divide and rule goes back over 2,000 years, and we've got to confront it directly. Every day, for example, we see the press reporting corporate crime, frauds, abuses, and the Congress doesn't pay any attention. Even under the Democrats, they didn't have the requisite public hearings that inform and mobilize people so they can basically tell their Congress who they work for in the first place. So I wrote this article in Capital Citizen. You can go to capitalcitizen.com to get a copy of the Capital Citizen, in order to show people their own history and to wake them up and to recover Congress. But you do it by personal lobbying of your Senate representative, just like the two powerful lobbies, AIPAC and NRA. They don't deal with marches and demonstrations. They deal with personal lobbying on the staff, on the members. They know the friends back home, their lawyers, their doctors, who they play golf with. So we really have to focus on this. Just like, you know, week after week you expose the mass murder in Gaza. It shouldn't be called ethnic cleansing. It's mass slaughter. It's genocide. It's in the White House. That's where the focus
Ralph, if I can ask you, though, your idea of Congress is there for the taking presumes that we are in ordinary liberal or neoliberal democracy. There are many people who fear that this next November election, that the Trump and the Republican Party are determined to declare victory no matter what the vote total is, and will use any means necessary to maintain themselves in power. I'm wondering about your sense of this. This growing fascism in the country and the ability of even a Democratic vote to take place in November?
Well, clearly, we're seeing a rapidly entrenching dictatorship. This is not authoritarianism. It's a dictatorship. He's violating laws right and left. He's violating the Constitution. He's open about it. He's protected by the Supreme Court decision of last year, Trump versus U.S., which basically says he can't be criminally prosecuted. And the Congress is run by the GOP. Well, one thing he fears, Juan, is impeachment. He's been impeached twice, and twice the majority of senators wanted to remove him, but they didn't get the two-thirds number required by the Constitution. The one tool that the people have is impeachment. Now, in September 15th, that's over 2 months ago. There was a Celinda Lake poll in swing districts in the United States showing 49% want him impeached, 44% opposed. And things have gotten much worse now. He's pushing the envelope on savagery He's moving us not from an autocracy, he's in a dictatorship, bleeding into a police state. Look what he's doing to the citizens in the cities and the immigrants, even legal immigrants, and there are manifestations of terror that are starting. So the focus has to be on impeachment, and there'll be a large majority of people in favor of it, and the Republicans in Congress are starting to crack on their sycophancy and fear of Trump, because they're going to be up for re-election in 2026, and he is not. When Nixon won 49 out of 50 states and came in with 60% popularity in less than 2 years because of the Watergate scandal, he was out. They were about to impeach and remove him. Why? Because the Republicans saw disaster coming in the 1974 elections, and it was their political skin vis-a-vis Nixon. They're going to save their political skin, and that's exactly what's happening now. And Nixon's transgressions won were less than 1% of the crimes and violations and brutality and cruelty and viciousness against millions of defenseless, powerless, and impoverished Americans. He, like the bully he is, he doesn't go after the contented classes. He facilitates corporate welfare. He shuts down corporate prosecutions in the Justice Department. But what he's going after are the tens of millions of people who are unorganized, who are poor, who are sick, disabled, Medicaid, you know, things you reported on your show, cutting off food supplements. We're talking about tens of millions of Americans.
Ralph?
So the impeachment has got to be the focus.
I wanted to ask you about this anniversary. 60 years ago this week, November 30th, 1965, you published your landmark book, Unsafe at Any Speed, The Designed and Dangers of the American Automobile. You went on to win a major settlement against GM, General Motors, for spying on you, trying to discredit you, trying to set you up with women, etc. And you use the lawsuit's proceeds to start the Center for the Study of Responsive Law. This is a clip from an interview you did 60 years ago on the safety flaws of GM Chevrolet Corvair.
What aggravates the problem is that the rear wheels of the Corvair begin to tuck under. And as they tuck under, the angle of tuck under is called camber. And as they tuck under, it can go from 3 or 4 degrees camber to 11 degrees camber almost in an instant. And when that happens, nobody can control the Corvair.
Well, then surely they did the right thing. They found out there was something wrong with the car and they fixed it.
Yes. The question is, why did it take them 4 years to find out? This is my point. Either it's sheer callousness or indifference, or they don't bother to find out how their cars behave.
That's Ralph Nader in 1965. His book, Unsafe at Any Speed, just marked its 60th anniversary. Ralph, this was bigger than the Corvair, though so significant, what you were able to do in passing new auto safety laws. You were taking on large corporations and exposed how they would retaliate, for example, spying on you. In this last minute that we have, not with you. You're going to stay with us for the next segment because we're going to talk about the WTO protests in 1999, a new documentary. Talk about the trajectory from 65 to now in trying to protect people in this country against corporations.
Well, I published Unsafe at Any Speed in 1965, Amy. GM tripped over it with their private detective scandal. It reached the Congress. Senator Ribicoff held highly publicized hearings. Then Senator Magnuson had hearings on motor vehicle safety standards, which didn't exist at that time. And the laws were passed. An auto safety agency was set up in the Department of Transportation called NHTSA. Millions of lives have been saved. Other countries importing into the U.S. had to meet the higher crashworthiness standards of the U.S. and recall requirements. None of that can be done today. None of that can be done today. There are great books coming out exposing all kinds of corporate crimes, forever chemicals, and all kinds of devastation of people's livelihoods. And they go nowhere. because our civic institutions, our democratic institutions, for the most part, have collapsed. And the corporations have continued 24/7, the nature of the corporate beast that never stops, to control more and more of our country, to control more and more of our local city councils, state legislatures, Congress, massive campaign contributions, four to 500 drug industry lobbyists assigned to Congress alone, for example, full time. And that's what we have to face up to. But we outnumber these corporations. We are the only ones mentioned in the Constitution. There's no mention of corporation or company or political parties indentured to them in the Constitution. So why are we letting them support? Why are we letting them control and rule us? That's the question that has to be asked of ourselves. And it only takes 1% or less of the people to defeat these corporations. That's about 2.5 million organized people in 435 districts. Already a woman who lost her two daughters due to defective truck designs in North Carolina is starting the first Congress watchdog group. And we're going to have her on my radio broadcast. But I want people to read my book, Civic Self-Respect, because it applies to everybody in the country. Well, the table of contents starts out, I the citizen, I the worker, I the consumer shopper, I the taxpayer, I the voter, I the parent, I the veteran, and how the people, without disrupting their normal routines, can add a civic dimension to all those roles every day.
Ralph Nader, we're going to ask you to stay with us for our next segment. Longtime consumer advocate, corporate critic, ran for president 4 times. In February, we'll celebrate his 92nd birthday. Up next, Ralph Nader's One of the Voices, featured in a new documentary, WTO 99. He'll stay with us, and we'll speak with the film's director about what happened in Seattle in 1999. Both Juan and I were there as well, covering this massive protest. Back in 20 seconds.
Yeah. Now, was it Cesar Chavez? Maybe it was Dorothy Day. Some will say Dr. King and Gandhi set them on their way. No matter who your mentors are, it's pretty plain to see. If you've been to jail for justice, you're in good company.
Singing Have You Been to Jail for Justice at the WTO protests in 1999 from the documentary This Is What Democracy Looks Like. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We end today's show with a new immersive archival documentary about the historic 1999 protests in Seattle against the World Trade Organization, corporate power, and economic globalization. The film scenes of the militarized police response and National Guard troops in the streets of Seattle seem eerily familiar. It uses more than 1,000 hours of footage from the Independent Media Center and other archives. This is the trailer for WTO 99.
135 nations are gathering in Seattle for the World Trade Organization meeting.
The TV stations, they're not informing people why there is a protest. This explains why there is a protest.
My personal reason for marching is because I want to see fair labor practices.
Globalization has already gone too far.
Not in our city, not in our state.
Our hand on violently shutting down the World Trade Organization.
I don't think they understood there were really going to be 70,000 people.
If we're going to clear this, we're going to need at least 5 more squads.
Police are protecting millionaires.
This, the last thing I want to do is be a mayor of a city where I had to call the National Guard.
B Before the 1999 protest, Congress debated a bill to support the creation of the World Trade Organization as an international judicial body to govern global trade. This is Senator Bernie Sanders at the time in another clip from WTO 99.
I think there is an important issue of sovereignty. The American people are increasingly alienated from the political process, and the World Trade Organization only takes more and more power out of the hands of local government and state government, and it gives it to nameless bureaucracies abroad that operate in secrecy.
When more than 40,000 people tried to shut down the WTO meeting in Seattle, they used nonviolent direct action, but were met with massive amounts of tear gas. In this clip from WTO 99, we hear a police announcement to protesters. Democracy Now! Is in the streets of Seattle. One scene in WTO 99 features my questioning of a Seattle police lieutenant wearing a gas mask.
Lieutenant Sanford, the person with the orange gun, that's rubber bullets?
I have to be honest, I don't know what's in it. Uh-huh. I would have to ask him specifically.
Could you ask him?
I could. It's probably either chemical agents or rubber bullets, something like that.
Could you ask? Just wanted to know.
Despite the police crackdown, protesters in Seattle had an overwhelming sense of victory. A dramatic scene in WTO 99 features legendary consumer advocate Ralph Nader.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Run for president!
I'm sure you realize what a historic week this is here in Seattle. And I'm sure you realize that never before in American history has any cause for justice brought together so many people from so many different occupations and backgrounds. Why? Why is it that although there are all a lot of groups represented here often disagree with one another on a daily basis, why is it they're all together on this? Because the World Trade Organization is a principal threat to democracy in the world.
Yeah! Scenes from the new documentary WTO 99, which starts screening this Friday at DC TV here in New York City at the Firehouse Cinema. We're joined now by the film's director, Ian Bell. Ralph Nader still with us. Ian, talk about why you've taken this on, what, more than a quarter of century later. Talk about this really archival extravaganza that documents what happened on the ground in Seattle.
So we took this on came from a number of conversations me and my editing partner were having around the 2016 election. We were really interested to see where, if there were deeper seeds to the shifts of the labor vote, and thought that maybe we could learn a little bit about going back to the WTO and the events of 1999. The film really started when we came across a project that was happening in Seattle of the organization digitization of the Independent Media Center footage. An organization called MePops was digitizing about 400 hours, and we were lucky enough to connect with them in the middle of that project and ultimately get the access to that footage after they were finished.
And Ian, you mentioned the independent media centers, but really the WTO protests were perhaps the birth of citizen journalism on a mass scale. The importance of having all of this archival footage, and could you talk for those people who don't know or weren't around then, the importance of the IMCs and how that movement spread across the country and the world?
Yeah, one thing that we really struck by was, small digicams were becoming more ubiquitous in the late 90s. And because of this technology and the efforts of the IMC at the time, we have all this footage that has been preserved by people in their shoeboxes, people collecting them and gathering them together, and then ultimately giving them to archivists. And what's so important about what they did was we're able to, and you see it in the film, we're able to see the events as they unfolded on the ground, as people who are in the crowds were seeing it, watching the interactions between protesters and the police. And the footage covered the whole week, almost every minute of the week. And we're able to then cut that together and compare it to the way it was being covered by local media. And I think what IMC, the real gift that the IMC provided to us who now, you know, in the future, is seeing that local media wasn't up to the task to show the people at home what was unfolding. And we're able to cut between those two sources, including national and international news, in real time to give people a sense of the narratives that were being constructed by those who maybe weren't asking the right questions or any questions or weren't curious enough to know exactly why people were coming to the streets.
And Ralph Nader, looking back now more than 25 years, a quarter of a century, the importance of those WTO protests in terms of shaping movements for progress and for radical change in the United States?
It punctured the myth of free trade. There wasn't free trade between countries. It was corporate managed trade that went beyond trade to subordinate higher standards for consumer, labor, environment, and make them viewed as non-tariff trade barriers and therefore illegal. So these are pull-down trade agreements enforced by WTO and NAFTA. And the Seattle protests blew that out of the water. And it began a change in Congress to eventually get us out of even worse entanglements like the Pacific Trade Agreement. Even before Trump took the issue away from the Democrats and ran with it.
Ralph, I wanted to go to one of the large corporations that were targeted there, in addition to the WTO. The film shows protesters targeting Starbucks' flagship location on 9th and Pike in Seattle. Then a clip of local news coverage featuring the response of then-46-year-old Starbucks coffee CEO Howard Schultz.
Howard Schultz says he can't figure out why one of his stores was targeted. We talked with him at last night's Sonics game.
We've really tried as a business to develop a corporate conscience, not only domestically, but around the world, especially where we buy coffee. So to hit Starbucks, really, we ask the question why.
That's so interesting, Ian Bell. In this last 30 seconds, we just covered a protest outside Starbucks in Brooklyn. Tomorrow, a major one outside the Empire State Building. Mahmoud Mamdani, right? Zohran Mamdani, the mayor-elect of New York City, and Bernie Sanders were both there. The significance of 26 years ago and today as we end this conversation.
These issues haven't gone away. I think what's been fascinating for us as we made the film, we could see so many of the issues that are galvanizing the youth movements and other movements that are trying to reform or change the direction of the Democratic Party. They were there and filling the streets 26 years ago. And the power structure at the time didn't listen to the people then. I hope that they begin to listen to them now.
I want to thank you so much for being with us. Ian Bell, director of the new documentary WTO 99, and longtime corporate critic Ralph Nader. WTO 99 starts screening Friday at DCTV's Firehouse Cinema here in New York. I'll be hosting a Q&A with Ian after the 7:30 screening. Also, tomorrow, December 4th, Thursday, I'll be doing the Q&A after the 7:30 screening of Steal the Story, Please, about Democracy Now!'s 30 years at the Bay Street Theater in Sag Harbor at the Hamptons Doc Fest there. Happy birthday to Emily Goslin. Again, I'll be in Sag Harbor Thursday night. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, it's Nardwar, the human serviette saying you're listening to CJSF Burnaby and do-do-loo-do CJSF.
With Canada's health system under strain, going digital can help heal our healthcare. From virtual visits for everyday concerns to faster, more accurate diagnostics powered by AI, technology is transforming care. Digital Health Canada supports the people and innovations behind this change. Learn more at digitalhealthcanada.com and subscribe to our podcast.